To start your show now, press 1. To hear important instructions, press 2. To speak to customer service, press 3.
Your show is scheduled to start in 18 seconds.
Test 1, 2, test 1, 2.
Your show will go live in 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. Blog Talk Radio.
Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that Notre Dame-USC matchup.
That's going to be one for the ages.
USC is a disaster, Dave.
I know. I'll be the first to admit it.
48-41 against Arizona. I mean, come on.
I know. It was
2-0 pitch. Nick Swisher pops it up. He's weak. Then I want him gone. He's weak. Gone, baby, gone.
First of all, Syracuse is going to be just fine in basketball.
Just fine in basketball. They're still always going to be behind North Carolina and Duke.
Who's sexting IT guy? Yeah, I was thinking like the Wendy's double. You know, White Castle 10-pack, you know, that would be...
Where did you get Wendy's out of that? Where did you get White Castle out of any of that? Because I've gotten a few racy text messages. They didn't have hamburgers.
Who is this? Who are we speaking to tonight?
I'm hijacking the program!
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now... Here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the Bingo Wednesday show. Good to have you with us from Santa Monica tonight on this disaster of a day. For me personally, here in the city of Locks of the Week Radio. But I hope that you're doing well wherever you are listening. We've got a big show for you tonight. And on this program, for which we are limited with the actualities, we will join Kevin on the Cape to start our program. That is hour number one. And in this first hour, we have a lot to talk about. We have, starting right now, the first of two big matchups between North Carolina and Duke in college basketball. And I'll tell you what, Duke is looking really good right now. They are back on a roll after having lost a game recently. They lost two games. I think they lost to the Johnnies and they lost to Notre Dame. Is that right? I think they lost to Notre Dame as well, and then they finally got it on track, and here we are in a big matchup of Cameron Indoor, Jahlil Okafor, looking really good. I mean, everybody's right. I mean, he looks like he's worth the hype, and they're going to go up against Marcus Paige and a team that happens to be the best rebounding team in the ACC, the North Carolina Tar Heels. So North Carolina was reported as an 8.5-point favorite, I mean, 8.5-point underdog as reported by VegasInsider.com. We will see about what fortune brings to these two teams along Tobacco Road tonight. Good to have you with us. This has been really just one of the worst days ever at my day job, and it isn't getting any better. I was on my way home. I found out that UCLA Medical Center. This is from PZ Feed, as a report as relayed by our friend Vtred. There were 100 patients infected with a deadly, well, exposed to a deadly virus. 7 have been confirmed to be infected. 2 have died. That doesn't make you feel good. You know, that medical center is like right next to the campus where I work. Not good. And at work itself, I won't even speak of that day. That was a disaster too. And then getting home, trying to start the recording computer, which served us for all of these seasons going back to late 2008 when we began the program, it stopped. It wouldn't start. It would not start. I reseated the monitor. I did all the connections over again. It wouldn't start. And I could tell it wouldn't start because you don't get that beep at the beginning when the computer starts. You know that little beep that when you start the computer and you see like some you know, some boring ass, you know, 80s text on the screen, and then it goes beep, and that just means that everything's working. Well, I didn't get the beep. I didn't get anything. I didn't see the screen. Nothing was working. So the recording machine is down. So the only way you're getting this program right now is through the YouTube stream and through the Blog Talk Radio stream. And so on the fly, I came up with an idea to
restore to deliver the podcast to our Podbean listeners or the people on iTunes. What I'm going to do is I'm going to, and thank God this is working now. I just got this working like 2 weeks ago, but I'm going to extract the audio from this YouTube stream you're listening to now, and and I will re-upload it as an MP3 to the Podbean feed. It'll sound a little weird for those of you who've been listening to us over the podcast on MP3, but it's the only thing I can do right now. My recording computer, my sound computer is down. So the intro you heard a moment ago, that montage is a throwback montage. It's a montage from 2011. That was not a deliberate play. I had no choice. I had to find something that would work. So we don't have the random questions jingle. Unfortunately, that's on that recording computer. It's down. Won't turn on. We don't have a closing theme tonight. We just have us. So let us, on that note, and with Duke and North Carolina underway, begin our program. And oh, I forgot. Hour two tonight, after we're done with random questions, starts at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. And in this hour, I will be joined for the first time by my friend Ryan in Camarillo, who's my dad's buddy, who met years and years ago. You know, like 8 years ago. I don't know, not 8 years ago, 7 years ago, something like that. And I've gotten to know him too, and we're friends as well. So I'm looking forward to talking to him in hour two at the top of this hour. On that spot, we are going to talk about the Magic Castle in Hollywood. And it sounds like such a vision and such a place of wonder. Well, it is. I mean, it's a very exclusive place, and you cannot get in unless you are invited by someone who is a member of the Magic Castle. And the only people who are members of the Magic Castle happen to be associated with the Academy of Magical Arts. So it's pretty magical. I mean, the greatest of greats have passed through those halls at the Magic Castle. And there is no public entrance. There are no civilian tours. You have to be invited. It's pretty amazing. So he was privileged to go. He was also privileged to invite my parents along. They went on Valentine's Day last weekend. We'll talk about that in hour two. Magic Castle, very exciting. But in hour one, we do not have the jingle, so I will fake it. Do the dance. It's time for random questions. Good stuff. In the city with Kevin on the Cape. I don't want to do that again. Let's bring in Kevin on the Cape on the program. Kev, I'm really sorry. This is, it's like when the power goes out at a radio station, like you got to improvise. How's it going tonight?
Thank God you did that, because I had the fear that you were going to ask me to do the jingle. That
would have been terrible. Oh, that would have been bad, too. I mean, nothing against... Oh, my good. Wow.
No, I'm completely deaf. I would have just destroyed it. That would probably have been our last show.
Unbelievable, junk man. This has just been a brutal day for me. Nothing was working at work. People bringing things and like, I just need to upgrade this and this, and it just wouldn't happen. I'm sorry to dominate the conversation, but can I just have a quick message to our fine people at Apple? You guys stink. Your Maverick, your Yosemite operating system is a piece of garbage. You can't upgrade anything on that thing unless it's already a new computer. I've read like 1,000 reports of people trying to upgrade their operating system to this new Yosemite, and it just bricks the system. It doesn't install, and it says, oh, we can't do it. The system integrity check didn't work, and then it restarts, and it goes in the cycle. It does the same thing over again. And so you're stuck. You have a computer that's inoperable. Well, congratulations. I mean, and then people have been complaining about iOS. I mean, you guys need to get your act together. This is ridiculous. It used to be that people talked about Apple's being easy to use. This is the easy computer. Nothing happened. There were no issues. And now it's like harder to set up a computer than it is a Windows machine. What has happened to these guys? Unbelievable. So that's that. Kevin, I got word from you in the text that you are buried under snow. I mean, all the reports about Boston getting just hammered with the storms and the snow. You say you are up to 6 feet now? 6 feet?
Oh, well, the snowbanks and that's just my driveway that I showed you today.
Oh, my God. Unbelievable.
There are certain areas. Yeah, it's ridiculous right now. It's about to get colder. So it's pretty awful. I'm choosing to ignore it now. I'm choosing to actually give the middle finger to Mother Nature and not pay attention to her and just drive like it's normal. And when people come to the store and they're miserable, and I just say, hey, this is great. What do you mean? There's no snow out there. So I've gone a complete 180. By Sunday morning, I wanted to kill myself. And now I'm just deliriously happy and trying to just put it out of my mind, like I said, and mind over matter, and just not give Mother Nature a second thought and tell her to go fuck herself.
I would like to issue that statement to a lot of people and things today, but I will not. In the interest of Ash Wednesday, I probably should be more humble than I am. And I certainly was humbled last night with those Corsi bets in the NHL. I'm never doing that again. Jesus. Sorry. I didn't mean to do that. But you know the funny thing about Ash Wednesday, Junkman? And I'm sorry to completely ignore everything you said, but no, just to restate. It's brutal. Like you said, like just don't let it get to you. You know, like haters are gonna hate. The weather is gonna weather. And I think in your position, all you can do now is just give it the cold shoulder, no pun intended, and let that roll. But anyway, Ash Wednesday, I'm not a religious guy, but I do partake in the Ash Wednesday because I think it's cool. I do, because it's a tribute to my mother, and I want to honor what she would have wanted in the situation. I mean, she's alive. She's not dead, but I mean, I want to honor what she wants in the situation.
She's alive. Why were you talking about her like she was past?
I know that was bad. That was bad. I didn't mean it that way. But she is not. She's very much alive. She's in great shape, and she's doing great. But I want to honor what she wants from me. You know, she wants me to be truthful and faithful. I can be truthful, so I want to for her do this, and I do the same thing on Good Friday. I try to do the fast, which is just one meal out of the day. So you make that meal count. I ended up going to Five Guys, and I go, see, you can do one meal, but it can't have meat. It's just like man. There's no winning here, but you end up having the meal. I ended up with a grilled cheese sandwich, which just tremendous, and the Cajun fries, pretty good. But you can have other things, like you can have like other foods, but they cannot add up to an additional meal. So, like each of these, maybe you could even have two half meals the rest of the day. That's okay, but you can't have three full meals. That's just not allowed. You can only have one full meal at any given time during the day, but. And so doing, they did not account for drink. So I will improvise a different way. I'm like the only guy, by the way. I'm like the only guy that probably really follows the stuff to the letter anyway. But I like to do it. I think it's cool. And it's a convenient excuse to eat better and be better. So that's the cool thing about it. Interesting question for you, Kev. Did you grow up as a Catholic at all? I'm curious. I don't know. If you didn't, that's okay. I don't care.
I did.
Somehow I thought so. That's interesting. Okay.
Catholic school from, you know, age 4 to through college. It 100%. Read the Bible, you know, 2 or 3 times, all that stuff.
Wow.
I had none through high school.
You know, I think you've alluded to this, and I just haven't really put it together. This is very interesting. That's interesting.
I know more about the Catholic religion and the stuff than most of the people who claim to, you know, who go to church on Sundays now and do all that stuff. I've seen it from both sides. It took me I like to say that it took me almost as long to rid myself of the Catholic mindset as it did to pay off my student loans. Just about the same, about 10 years.
Now, when was that turning point for you? If you don't feel comfortable talking about it, you don't have to, but I imagine there was a turning point.
Wait a minute. I mean, this is the Dave show. I mean, I wouldn't be on here if I didn't feel comfortable talking about anything and everything. So I'm always comfortable talking to you about anything, especially this. But to answer your question, there was no specific turning point. It was more of a growing up, reading more, talking to more people, meeting more people, getting a different view of things. When you're a kid, you have a very small frame of reference. You have your parents, you have your teachers, and your coaches, you know, if you play sports and that kind of stuff. But as far as the adults go, it's very limited. Not until you get into your 20s and you start experiencing different things and people, you know, different mindsets. Like, I always run into kids, especially kids that work for me, younger kids, and every once in a while you get a kid who's kind of, he thinks he's an outcast, you know, he thinks he doesn't fit in. And I always just try to tell them, just wait till you get older, wait till you get into your 20s, you know, you're going to find way more people who think like you do. You may think you're alone now, but when you get older, your world expands, and you're introduced to different theories and different thoughts, and it's what you do with it that makes you an adult, makes you more well-rounded. I don't have anything against people who still go to church on Sundays if they think that's their deal. I'm not one of those people who would say it's wrong. I mean, I don't agree with them, but I also would say that I would fight for their right to do whatever they want, to go to church and to do that stuff and believe in ridiculous things, which is fine. I just don't happen to believe in those things anymore.
So your 20s is when you really came of age, and at the same time, it seemed to affirm that, you know, maybe it's not just about a specific viewpoint or a specific style, and I think that's really cool. And, you know, you mentioned how you said you were isolated when you were younger, but I get the sense there are people out there who are still isolated today, at least from that standpoint. And so you find it interesting. It's like the more you experience the world, I think the less you would be maybe prejudiced about anything because you've known other people and other things, and it leaves you less inclined to do such a thing. That seems to be the experience from a lot of people I know. And I can't say that I've been nearly as traveled or experienced or any of that, but I certainly have met people who have, and I think that's the cool thing, going through life like that. So it's really cool. I'm glad to see you felt that way. And I agree. And I think I agree with you in respecting those who practice faith, because I think it's a valuable asset for those who partake. But it doesn't necessarily mean for me that I have to believe in it. But some people do, and you got to respect that, I think, because whatever the reasons are, you don't know what the reasons are. I think it's perfectly fine. But it's just that if they start forcing it on other people, that's where I start having problems. So it's always a complicated situation. So let me give you an update on Duke, North Carolina. Duke's off to a good start. They have a nice lead, not like a 20-point lead, but it's very early. They just tipped off about 8 minutes ago, and they're doing swell, Junkman. So I will keep you up to date on that game throughout the rest of the evening. But looking at it so far, it seems to me that Duke is the clear class of this matchup. Not surprising by any means, but I just felt going in that Duke was going to totally control this game, Cameron Indoor. And while North Carolina might have a run here or there, I think this is going to be a game where I think they're going to end up being really and just completely not even worrying really about losing the game. I think it's a good matchup, a good rivalry, but I still think that this is just a whole nother level above where North Carolina is right now. So Your thoughts? I mean, you follow Duke. I suppose you're not watching it right now, but I'll let you know the score as we go along.
There's no way on earth I would ever think that if I was still a betting man, 8.5 points, I would take that every minute. North Carolina always plays those games close.
Oh, so you think they're going to be a close game? Okay.
Yeah.
That's a big point spread. No question. No question.
That's huge for that game.
Yeah, no, it is.
That's ridiculous. And Dave, I was looking at the our favorite website tonight with all our wonderful posters, and I saw a story that somebody linked that Dick Vitale is not doing this game for the first time in the history of ESPN.
No, you're right, though. That is correct.
Pretty crazy. Is the new Dickie V, apparently.
Yep, that was decided when the season started, and Dick Vitale not doing the prime game anymore. So it's I think my reaction to that is it was a good run. I mean, he had covered so many games for so many decades, so many teams. And I don't think Dick Vitale feels too bitter about it, to be honest. He's the kind of guy I think that would take it in stride, and he can say, hey, you know what? I had a good run. And I kind of look at it that way.
I read the article that they linked to on the site, and he sounded bitter about it to me.
Oh, he did. So I have it wrong. I didn't know. Wow. What did he say?
It was someone linked the story, like the Charlotte Observer or one of the papers down south, and somebody caught up with him, and he basically said, I'm not going to badmouth ESPN. I'm a team player, but it's going to be hard not to be at that game.
Yeah, that was his lifeblood, wasn't it? It was always funny how he would always get assigned to that game. And I think towards the end it got pretty annoying because his Duke homerism really was driving a lot of people crazy. But, you know, the reduced role for Vitale, I think, needed to happen, though, because he was really coming off the rails. I think he's okay now, but he's old. I mean, what do you expect? I don't think anyone is going to take – I mean, I don't think it's going to be easy for anybody. I mean, Pat Summerall could barely talk by the end of his career. And so that's not easy for him. Like, he probably has a lot of pride doing those games. So, okay, so I interpreted that completely wrong. But at the same time, I would say that hopefully at least Mr. Vitale understands, you know, times are changing. And Jay Billis is a tremendous, tremendous analyst. So, I don't know. I guess that's too bad. I guess I thought he would have been a little more understanding about it, but I guess not. But what can you do, right?
Right.
Let me ask you this. Do you agree with that decision? Do you think that he should be doing this game?
I don't know the specifics of his contract. I think it ends this year, so if that's the case, I do think it's a little silly to take him off that game in his last year at ESPN. But I do agree with him being phased out. I mean, he's sort of jumped the shark a long time ago. But if this is last year, they should have just let him do the game. I mean,
I wasn't aware of his contract situation. I didn't know if this was.
I think I looked up really quick before we started. I think 2015 is his last year. Currently, I mean, who knows? He could sign another contract, obviously, but. If the ESPN people are under the mindset of this is his last year, they should have let him do the game. It's kind of silly. But that's ESPN. That's what they do. They're a bunch of jerks. So
well, I mean,
he's a total Duke homer. I would never dispute that ever. He's a more Duke homer than Jay Billis, who went to Duke. So that just tells you a little bit about it. So,
that's a good point. That's a good point. You
know, who actually played there and. But he's. I'm going to try to say this so that he was really good. Let's see. Oh, I'll mess this up. He was really good for college basketball. I mean, when he came on, he had no idea what he was doing. You know, he totally admits that when they first hired him there, he wanted to coach again. But he was good for college basketball. He got people excited and. In the late 80s and early 90s, with this stuff. And trust me, I don't feel sorry for him at all. He's made more money than he could probably ever imagine. He made more money than as an announcer. He's in the Hall of Fame as an announcer. He was a good college coach. He was a horrendous NBA coach. I'm just saying, I'm not in that world anymore. I'm not in that media world anymore. But if this was his last year, they should have let him do the games he wanted to do. But I could totally understand they want to move on. They've got a bunch of great talent, younger talent there. So ushering in the new generation, you know, that's just the times we're living in. As you just said, the times are changing.
I think ESPN's viewpoint on this is that they want to do it a year too early rather than a year too late. I think if I had known, if they were more aware of the fact that this was his last year, this would have been a good spot to just let him do the game. I didn't realize that. I was just really paying attention to that. I was just thinking, it's like, you know, it's probably got another couple of years, you know. I mean, how do you know? We don't know.
But you're right. It's enough already. I mean, you're in the media world that we always complain about people who have been around too long, and Tim McCarver is around too long, and certain guys just like are enough already. So there's probably some young hotshot vice president at ESPN who said enough already. You know, let's Jay Billis is terrific. And I think Dan Shulman is terrific. You know, so it's time to move on. And you're right. Rather definitely do it a year early rather than a year too late. So that's probably what some executive thought, and you can't blame them for that. You know, it's actually kind of refreshing if you think about it, because we always talk about guys who are just, I mean, Dick Enberg and Dick Stockton and all these guys, and you're just like, holy cow, enough already. You know, even people on the radio. And they mess up the simplest details, and you're like, they do no show prep and no research. And
right.
Even a clown like me who doesn't even follow half the sports anymore, you know, will listen to some old guy on the radio driving home in 15 minutes and pick up like three or four mistakes. And you're like, oh my goodness, like how is this okay? Parentheses, I was talking about Jody McDonald, but.
Good. Yeah, Jody McDonald. Was he ever good? He just seems strikes me as a guy that
he was never good, and he is all over the radio, Dave.
I've heard.
I've been driving a lot. Yeah, he's on like Fox Sports Radio, in the Fan, and I don't know. Not to go off on too much of a rail, but just the other day, in 10 minutes, I'm driving, and he called. He was breaking down the American League and talking about the teams that are eliminated, teams that he didn't think had a chance to make the playoffs, the teams that were good. He called the guy on the Angels, Richardson. I know the guy's name is Richards. I don't know his first name. I know that he's a pitcher. I don't know what he looks like. If he was sitting next to me right now, I wouldn't be able to tell, but I know his last name is Richards. I think it's Garrett, but I'm not exactly sure. But he called the guy Richardson. Which is sounds kind of silly, but I immediately I heard that, and then he talks about the best player on the Rays. You know, they got rid of the best player. I'm going, holy cow! Did the Rays trade Evan Longoria? That's insane. I didn't hear about this. And he was talking about some other guy, like Ben Zobrist or something. I'm like, wait, they still have Evan Longoria on the team. How is he not their best player? And it was one of these things where I immediately got home and went on my computer to make sure that the guy on the Angels was named Richards and Evan Longoria was still in the race. I'm like, how did they let somebody, and of course I was right, how do they let someone have a show and just totally not know what you're talking about? I understand you may not know who the fifth starter is or what the WAR versus the user rating and all that kind of stuff is, but these are like 25-man rosters, and these are the best players on these guys' teams. I don't know. It's just kind of silly where people who are in those kind of positions just totally do no prep and no research. And they just are almost unfiltered. They're not held accountable at all.
That's, yeah, it's hard to say when is when, right, at this point. All right, Junkie, we have some breaking news. First of all, let's give you an update on the Duke game. Duke is up comfortably at this point. Remember, comfortably, it's first half, so I say you're like 8 to 9 points. That's usually a comfortable score. They're up 28-17, but Carolina's got a free throw pending. And it's good, so it's 28-18, 10 points for Duke as we continue going through the rest of that game. It's only the first half, not even the 10-minute mark yet, so we have much to discuss. So speaking of which, I know that you probably were privy to the Saturday Night Live 40th anniversary special, which was on Sunday. I had a good time with it. There are obviously some hits, some misses, you know, just like any SNL episode. But the breaking story now is that Norm MacDonald is sharing like a whole story about it on Twitter. Now, to do that, you have to tweet like 500 tweets. So we are going to read all of them. Okay, you ready for this? Are you ready? Would you like to hear Norm MacDonald's behind the scenes look at SNL 40? Because the answer is no, I guess we have to just bypass it, but yeah? No? What do you think?
Sure.
Okay.
I don't understand the story.
He's just tweeting, like, you know how like some guys will like share like anecdotes of being at something or whatever. Now, first of all, Norm MacDonald had a great, this was fantastic, reprising his role, writing the Celebrity Jeopardy skit, because he usually writes those, and he also plays the Burt Reynolds character on the sketches of Celebrity Jeopardy. He's a funny guy. He's just so funny. I used to follow him on Twitter, but he just came off the rails too much. He came off the rails a little too much when he was talking about, I don't know, Christianity or something, and I couldn't take it anymore. I had to unfollow him, but he is funny. So I forgive him for that. But his tweets are resurfacing again, so I am going to go back and read them to you. So I've jumped back on his account. Here we go. It was some week, he says. Norm MacDonald over Twitter. I got in early Monday so I could write. It was a massive undertaking, a 3-hour show. People were exhausted. I worked with Laurie Jo Hoekstra and Steve Higgins. And do you know who Steve Higgins is? He's a guy that he collaborates with Jimmy Fallon on The Tonight Show and formerly Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. So you see him as the announcer of the show, but he's also a writer. So he worked with Laurie Jo and Steve Higgins, who was always in a suit. That's funny. Because he had to go be Jimmy's sidekick every day, round 5. I saw Lauren, thanked him and congratulated him, and shook his hand as Canadians do. He accepted. Got that out of the way early. That's funny. At Norm MacDonald on Twitter. Next tweet from Norm MacDonald. Mood was too relaxed. I was confused as to who exactly was to be in charge of this thing. It has to be Lorne Michaels. Of course. It was to be Lorne. Duh. All right, next tweet. They wanted Celebrity Jeopardy. Higgins had 2 funny categories already figured. And I said that intentionally, figured. That's what he wrote. All right, you ready for this? Next tweet. I came up with the idea of Celebrity Jeopardy years ago by stealing it note for note from an SCTV classic, Half Wits. Hey, remember that? Do you remember that? That was funny. That is really old school. Wow. Higgins and I co-wrote the first one years ago, and I waited for Martin Short to host so I could ask permission to steal. And he said Eugene Levy had the original. So we received permission, and besides Daryl and I, the talented Mr. Short played Jerry Lewis. This is great. This is really good. This right here is just amazing. This isn't even about SNL 40. This is about how he came up with Celebrity Jeopardy. Okay, here we go. It was always difficult to fit in that final celebrity. You had to get 3. Okay, next tweet. That's mind-blowing. I didn't realize that he was intentionally borrowing from SCTV. A lot of guys unintentionally borrow from it. You know, can I just stop the tweets for a second? I just need to comment on this. I don't think people really realize how much of an influence SCTV was on comedy. It is just a phenomenal show. So funny. And it really inspired a lot of other things in comedy. Have you ever seen it, you know, back in the very early 80s? In the late 70s, too?
No.
I would say then go see it. Go see it on YouTube or something, because it's, you will love it. Anyway, Norm Macdonald continues, "We never wanted a celebrity to be dumb, although many, even within the show, thought that was the idea." And that's usually how it played out. Anyway, next. "The idea was for Connery to be abusive and Bert to be dismissive." Well, mission accomplished. Next tweet. "Sometimes people ask me who the funnier character is, Connery or Bert." His response and his follow-up. "The funniest character in Celebrity Jeopardy by far is Alex Trebek, played by Will." That would be Will Ferrell. That's funny. "Without Will's perfect take on Trebek, maddened by the outright hostility of Connery, the faraway uninterest of Bert, the sketch is nothing." What is this? This is wild insight here. This is good. Are you familiar with the Celebrity Jeopardy skits, Mr. Jackman?
I am.
It's just my favorite thing on SNL growing up. It was just so funny. So good. Okay, up next. "Nothing but Rich Little nonsense." And I'm sure you're familiar with Rich Little. Am I right?
I am.
Yeah, Rich Little is one of the greatest impersonators of our generation. Maybe not our generation anymore, but definitely for many years he was. So on we go. Norm writes, "It was always the third podium that was hard to find a man to stand behind." Interesting, isn't it? Next tweet. It would inevitably only be an impression, nothing but an empty showcase." I love his candid way of speaking. And it's the way he's always been. I mean, if you ever saw him on a Weekend Update, he didn't really hold anything back. He's one of the most honest people in the universe. He's great.
Yeah. I think that's what I ended up getting him axed, was that Weekend Update, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, he got a little too close to the sun with the O.J. Simpson references, and they say
every clip was like, he would give the news and then he would look over and he goes, "You know, he killed those two people, right?" even while the trial was going on, he would say, he would give a bit of the news and he would look over and he would go, "You know, he murdered those two people, right?" And he would not stop. That's kind of the end. I mean, I watched it as a kid and sort of in my 20s, but that was the last. He was the last Weekend Update person I remember, but I always remember him and just cracking up when he would just kind of turn his head and look back at the camera and goes, "You know, he killed those people, right?"
You know, I think it probably crossed up a lot of people at the time. Like, it's like, it's just too awkward to be funny, but I just saw such a kick out of it. It's much funnier now. Like in the prism of time, go back and watch him again because it's just amazing how funny he was. I just love it. He had no filter. It was just he continues to have no filter. It's just so funny. He's an incredibly humorous guy, and he's Canadian. That's awesome too. Okay, next up. So we were talking about how he was struggling to get that third guy for the Celebrity Jeopardy sketches. So on we go. Norm writes, "It would inevitably..." Oh, no, sorry. Next tweet was, "The best to do it was Tom Hanks." He says Hanks, but it's Tom Hanks. "Playing dumb Hanks. Hanks always got it. And Alec, too," meaning Alec Baldwin. Next up. All right. Norm Macdonald writes, "So we hunkered down to write it. 40th anniversary and all. Had to be the best one. Tough job. Very tough." Then he writes, "Then I was told it was to have a lot of impressions, 10 or 12, so a lot of big stars could be seen impersonating other big stars. This was bad news." I totally get that. I totally get what he's saying there. Bad news. I get it. It's tough. It's tough because, like, you don't want to force it. You don't want to really force impressions. And I get it. He really wants to put, you know, he wants to put comedy in it. And if it's just guys like being Caliendo, like doing impressions, it's not really, that's kind of losing the nature of it. I get it. Okay, next up. So, I mean, he's pretty much expounding on this. His next tweet says, Celebrity Jeopardy was never about impressions. Next tweet. In real life, Connery is the opposite of Daryl's take. Daryl would be Daryl Hammond. Connery was the perfect gentleman. Bert was the funniest guy in the room. Celebrity Jeopardy was about hope. I don't know what that means, but that's pretty I don't know. That's touching that he'd say that. Okay, ready for his next tweet. Okay, Norm MacDonald. It was about the hope of one man, Alex Trebek. The hope that never died. The audacious hope that never let the facts of the past interfere. This guy's amazing. Next tweet. It was a rhythm piece as each disaster was signaled by the sound of a buzzer and each new category signified more new hope. And the third contestant was a tough one. The third attitude always just out of reach of Higgins and me. Let's just pause for a second. I remember Jimmy Fallon bringing this up, that Higgins was a big part of those Celebrity Jeopardy sketches. It was on the last episode of Late Night before he moved across the hall, literally just across down the hallway, to another studio at Rockefeller Center for Tonight Show. And he brought that up. He was like, yeah, Higgins used to collaborate as a writer on the Celebrity Jeopardy sketches. So, gosh, it's just my favorite thing. You know, I mean, I can see that you can see Junkman. They are putting so much into these sketches, and this is just a treat. You can see, I mean, are you surprised at how much effort went into these things?
Not at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a quality piece. You know, you look back and you realize, like, okay, you know, this definitely had a lot of quality because people really put a lot into it. So, absolutely, I can totally get that. Yeah. All right, so up next.
I think that's what most people don't realize is what goes into a 5-minute, 3-minute, you know, producers and writers and that kind of stuff. A lot goes into those small little pieces that you see on television.
Yeah.
We used to start, when I was doing the NBC thing before we left, we started doing this studio thing for fantasy football with this really hot girl and this kind of nerdy guy. And it would take us, you know, hours and to get everything right. And the final result was, you know, a 10-minute thing, clip on the website. A lot goes into that kind of stuff. So I can just imagine what the pressure that those guys, this was, you know, really a hyped show and everyone was tuned in to that on Sunday. So I completely understand all the work that goes into that.
Yeah. And there's no retakes like that. Like your deal, like you could take it over and over and over. They had one shot, get a rehearsal to try it out, and then one shot live on TV on Saturday night, and that was it. So you can imagine the pressure. This is really cool. I'm actually enjoying these tweets. They've really started to go viral. That's why I got wind of them. Let's continue. I could read Norm MacDonald talking about Jeopardy forever. I don't think that's what's going to happen, though, but we're in a good spot right now. So next tweet, here we go. Norm MacDonald on SNL 40 Jeopardy sketch. And now we were being told we would have to do a dozen impressions. The rhythm would be gone. I get it. You know, when we do this show, Junkie, less sometimes is more. And I realize the cadence of the program necessitates a little give and take. You need the right guys, and you need the right amount of guys. And if I remember one time I did a Yankee panel. We used to do this thing called Yankee panel. Remember this on the show? And we had like 5 guys one time, and it was hard to juggle all that. So I get it. I totally understand where he's going with that. It would be frustrating if you had to mix in, like, you take Celebrity Jeopardy, you have to quadruple the number of people involved. I mean, would that not be frustrating in your case?
Absolutely.
So let's hear from Norm a little bit more. He adds, it was what it was, though, and what it was to be. How could it be saved from becoming an episode of Copycats? I don't know what Copycats is, so I'll let that one go. Up next. And then Higgins had an idea. An idea that would blow the show wide open. Among many things, this show was to be the return of Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy, the man who, in Lorne's absence, kept the show alive single-handedly. Oh, my God. Do I agree with that? Oh, God. Yes, I agree with that. I wrote that on Twitter myself. I said, Eddie Murphy, and Chris Rock said the same thing on the special. He said that Eddie Murphy saved Saturday Night Live. Who is to disagree with that? I can't imagine anyone is. Because I was thinking, like I said, I wrote on Twitter, to prove this, that he saved Saturday Night Live, watch any sketch that didn't have him in it. You would die from boredom. It was just awful. I've watched some of these episodes, you know, I watched them twice. Some of the these early 80s episodes within the Eddie Murphy era. I mean, it was tough. It was really tough to... If they didn't have Eddie Murphy during those years, the show would be gone. It would be gone. I mean, Chris Rock is right. That's what he said. The show would not... We wouldn't even be talking about this right now. He revived the show. He did. Junkman, your thoughts?
I have no memory of Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night Live.
Really? Oh, my God. You see, I was acquainted with his episodes through Comedy Central. When I was in high school, they would rerun the shows. And I laughed so hard at a lot of this stuff. It was really good. So anyway, that's funny. Okay, well, I mean, it was before a time. Like, when the shows aired, I was a baby. So I never saw them when they aired. But I saw them after the fact in reruns. So, okay, next up. So he brings up Eddie Murphy. Let's see where this goes. Norm MacDonald on Twitter. To every comedian who ever performed on SNL, what Eddie accomplished was unthinkable. This is pretty cool. Every Saturday night at 11:30, Eddie Murphy, a kid, would fill 90 minutes with comedy. Impossible, says Norm MacDonald. The last anniversary was the 25th. Eddie did not attend due to a remark by David Spade. David is a very kind man. But his remark was not. And I remember that remark. And it was rough. It was rough. Okay. So Norm said, so Eddie never came back until last week. Higgins had the idea. A video daily double. The category would be potent potables, a common one in Jeopardy, but one we somehow had never done. And the idea was that it would be a bar set. And the idea was that Cosby would... be mixing a drink in a video that was taped 6 months ago. It was perfect. It was all Steve Higgins' idea. Norm MacDonald continues, at the end of the sketch, Daryl would choose potent potables. Home base would be dressed as a bar. The iconic doors would open and onto home base would step Eddie Murphy. The audience would know what to do. Why is Eddie wearing a multicolored sweater? He steps behind the bar, begins mixing a drink. The audience covers the fact he has not spoken. When he speaks, he is Cosby. Eddie Murphy doing a perfect Bill Cosby impression. The audience does not let him finish. The sketch ends. The show, for all intents, ends. All the impressions are forgiven. The first thing is to cut down the number of contestant impressions, and the second is to contact Eddie and to convince him to do it. Well, this gets interesting. Okay, up next, Norm MacDonald's tweets. The middleman to talk to Eddie was Brett Ratner, a cool guy who knows a great deal about comedy. He was with Eddie somewhere. So the talks were underway. Brett says, Eddie doesn't feel comfortable. Eddie says, maybe it's okay since he's doing pre-allegation Cosby. And on it went. I had not spoken to Eddie or Brett Ratner. I was dead sure Eddie would do it. Most others were not. Still, there was so much work to do. Mike and Dana showed up. They were going to do Wayne's World. I joined the writer's room, which Mike helmed, and tried to help. This is kind of a tangent. Okay, so Norm MacDonald continues. Mike Myers has an incredible work ethic, and no joke is ever good enough and must be beaten. Must be beaten. This is what makes him so good. This is why he has created a half dozen perfect comedies. Work ethic, remarkable taste, and never taking no for an answer. I'm going to be here all night reading these junk. I'm looking at this bar, the bar in my web browser, and I'm barely like, I got like a quarter of the page to go. This is going to be a while. So anyway, Juckman, your thoughts about Norm MacDonald's anecdotes up to this point.
That's a nice little insight on what they did on Sunday. That's pretty cool.
This is pretty good. I'm really enjoying these tweets. Okay, up next. So my question is, did Eddie actually do it? And I don't think he did, because I saw the spot, but we'll continue. Higgins would stick his head in the room from time to time, tell me another celeb had been cut, make me happy. I kept trying to help Mike. I didn't get a single joke into Wayne's World. It was a great sketch, and he did a top 10 list, best things about SNL. This is true. Next tweet, Norm MacDonald. When on air, he announced number one, The Crew. The studio audience, unprompted, gave a standing ovation. I'd never seen this in 8H, Studio 8H. Jim Downey, the best writer who ever touched pen to paper, showed up Wednesday with a copy of Rolling Stone in his fist. I think Jim Downey wrote a lot of the Weekend Update spots that we just referred to earlier with Norm MacDonald. Yeah, just FYI. The magazine had listed all 141 SAT members and ranked them best to worst. Guess where you ranked, he laughed, and I knew from the laugh it was low. As long as I beat, and I mentioned a girl who lasted four episodes, the joke was that I really hoped I would beat a girl that who nobody had ever heard of. The bigger joke is I hadn't. Poor Norm. That's not fair. If that's true, then Rolling Stone, those Rolling Stone guys are full of it. That is ridiculous. He needs to be way higher. Way higher, if that's true. Okay, next up. Norm MacDonald. My mind searched for an even more obscure cast member. I remember the first year SNL hired an older man because they didn't think all the kids could play characters of age. That's actually right. I remember this. They did have some older guy in there that I don't remember. I don't think he was officially part of the cast. Do you remember the name? Are you an SNL historian at all? No?
What name?
Yeah. Who? The really old guy that played on SNL like during the 70s for like a year.
No.
I can't imagine you did. The guy's name is George Coe, so let's continue. As long as I beat George Coe, I said, making a fine joke. Again, the truth was a finer joke. Co had easily outranked me, and on it went. That's I don't get it. I think these writers are not. I don't know what's going on here. I would have ranked him easily above all those guys. Next, I should say that it was not the magazine that ranked us, but a single writer. I looked him up and found the book he had written. Good point. He doesn't deserve to be named. And his book was sentimental nonsense, meant to look something like Dave Eggers would write. Are you familiar with Dave Eggers? I do not know who he is, so next.
I am familiar with him.
Oh, you are? Or are you not?
Absolutely. I am.
What's his deal? What's Dave Eggers' deal?
He's a writer. He's just a gay guy who lives in New England and writes stuff.
No. He's like, okay.
Like a super brain kind of, I'm smarter than you, kind of writer.
Oh, God. About what I thought. Okay, next up. Yeah, because seriously, I would not rank Norm MacDonald under... George Coe did nothing. I watched, like, the first couple of seasons of SNL one time on Netflix. I'm like, George Coe is worthless. Okay, next. But in all fairness, it was not the magazine who did... Oh, I'm sorry. The idea of jokes approved by a writer the caliber of Jim Downey being called lame by some sappy writer was a great joke. Yeah, zing. I agree. Next. Downey was in charge of the political pieces, the best of which he had written, and nobody knew what was going on with Update. At least that's what I was told the dozen or so times I was asked. Who was in charge of Update? I asked, and eyes would get shifty. Was it the guy that wrote the Rolling Stone thing? Still, I had to write Jeopardy. Higgins, Laurie Joe, and I would stay late into the night and go to PJ Clark's and end the nights at 3. Are you familiar with PJ Clark's? I think I've heard of that place. That's in Manhattan somewhere.
Absolutely, I am.
Have you been?
Of course. Long, long time ago.
Ah, nice. Yeah. So it's been around a while. I remember this. I've heard the name. And I can't remember exactly if they have a good burger or not. But they are, yeah, they've been around here, an institution. What do you like most about PJ Clark's?
Just the people. Just the people I met there.
Cool. Okay.
All different. Yeah. You know, it was one of those bars that you could be next to a guy running a hedge fund and then be next to a mailman or a garbage man in the same bar.
Word up.
Which is one of the things I used to love about
the
New
people,
York.
Huh? That's cool. That's cool. Okay. So we're running short on time. We're down to the last 4 minutes. So I will be quick with these remaining tweets because I really want to see the end of this. I mean, I got to see what they did here. It was like the old days, says Norm MacDonald. Norm MacDonald continues. We worked straight through me with my Winnipeg Jets jersey. Hey, I didn't know that. I forgot he was from Winnipeg. I didn't know like what specific part of Canada he was from. That's cool. Winnipeg's kind of struggling right now. I can only hope that they do enough to get in the playoffs. But the funny thing is, if they get, they're in a position where they're fighting for that wild card spot, and the Kings are fighting that same wild card spot with them. So it's like, I want them to win enough, but I don't want them to win to the point that it keeps the Kings out of the playoffs either. So it's a tightrope right now with Winnipeg and LA. Next up, Lori Cho in a beautiful dress, Higgins in his Tonight Show suit. And Downey, meaning, I forgot his name already, Jim Downey, I think, had remembered a thing Bill Murray used to do around the office, the theme from Jaws, and thought that would be perfect. Oh, my God, that was so good. But there was a problem. Bill Murray was in Carmel for the Pro-Am. That was like about the same week, which he had won a couple years back with DA points. What's the hell? DA, is that a golfer? Okay. With Bill Murray, golf always comes first. I didn't know that. Did you know that? Did you know that? He's a man. I don't care.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
He does love golf. I would agree. You know, I didn't realize he loved it that much, so that's pretty wild. Okay. And so was Saturday, and Bill Murray may not make it, and Eddie Murphy may not do Jeopardy, and who was in charge of update? ? And chaos seemed ready to sink it all, so I went to Lauren. Norm MacDonald continues, and Lauren was in his office, which overlooks 8H, which overlooks 40 years of memories, and he was looking out the window down on the floor. And I was very nervous, and he was perfectly calm. Perhaps it would help if you called Eddie, and that was that. My son got in on Saturday and wandered as the stars became bigger and bigger around him. I'm talking to Laurie, Joe, and Higgins, and Fred, and my son, and suddenly Paul McCartney is there. And he is in the circle of us, and Laurie Joe talks about being a vegan, and he says his daughter works for Gucci and is a designer, but no leather. I mean, you know Paul McCartney's deal. He's a humanitarian and an animal rights activist as well, so that makes sense. My son and I look at each other. Very cool. Norma continues, and the four of us follow McCartney into 8H as he sits behind the piano and does six songs. I take a video on my phone of Fred Wolf striking a Dylan pose, I think you like that, with McCartney in the background at the piano singing. I get all filmmaker and go over Fred's shoulder and get real close to Paul. And when he finishes, he's looking directly into my camera. Then as he finishes one and goes into another, I feel a hand on my back, the hand of security, solid hand. There is Sarah Palin, gorgeous, and you can understand the charisma. She is irresistible. All right. Norm MacDonald, and too many superstars to take in all at one time. So happy my son could see them all. And then comes Eddie. I'm standing with my son, Laurie Joe, and Chris Rock. We see Eddie from 100 yards away. Rock says, there he is, like Ali and Zaire. Eddie, Bommier. It is my job to talk him into doing Jeopardy. We talk in his dressing room for a good hour. An hour, Junkman, an hour. When it's over, I'm convinced he'll do it. He doesn't. Ooh. And you know what? I think that's right. Next up. He knew the laughs would bring the house down. Eddie Murphy knows what will work on SNL better than anyone. Eddie decides the laughs are not worth it. No, excuse me. Eddie decides the laughs are not worth it. He will not kick a man when he is down. What is your interpretation of that, Junkie? What do you think that means? Hello? Hello? Uh-oh. Kevin, I'm sorry, yeah, man. Hello. Did I put you to sleep?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit. I'm sorry, buddy. I didn't know how many tweets he has. He has like, I didn't know it was this many. It was so many. Wow. It's almost over, though. He says, Eddie Murphy, I realize, is not like the rest of us. Eddie does not need the laughs. Eddie Murphy is the coolest a rock star, even in a room full of actual rock stars. Quite a week. And that's that. So, anyway, sorry to drag that out. I didn't know it was going to be that long. So, anyway, really wild insight from Norm MacDonald. I think that's pretty cool. So, okay, Junkman, since I've dominated, since I just wasted a whole half an hour with that, I'm really sorry. I didn't know it was going to be that long. Anything you want to offer to me? Anything else that you wish to talk about?
No, not really.
All right, I don't blame you. Okay. So can I ask you this question, though? Because we still have a little bit of time left. Do you think that the Pablo Sandoval thing is overblown? I mean, everybody was talking about how he's so fat. And I looked at him and I'm like, he looks about the same as he did in San Francisco. I don't really know. Maybe is it just the fact that the fans are not familiar with his weight issue? His weight. Do you think that the media furor over Pablo Sandoval's gut is overrated?
Absolutely. It's baseball, not the triathlon.
Okay. Junkie, come on, man. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I just wanted to share a few tweets. I thought it was interesting, and I thought it was an interesting situation. And those are good anecdotes. I don't think you would disagree with that. It is too bad that he wrote that many of them. So I think that is it for the time being. Our next guest isn't on yet, though, so we have some extra time to chat. Let me ask you this. What else do I have to talk about tonight? I guess that was it. But, with this snow hitting as hard as it has, is your workplace affected in terms of the amount of traffic you get in your facility? Like, has it been easier for you in terms of number of customers in Max Seafood?
Oh, it's very slow, Dave. Very slow. Not a lot of people out here right now.
I see. Does that give you an opportunity to like catch up on certain things?
No, it gives me an opportunity to have time to fix things that break because of the freezing weather.
Oh, gosh, that's right. And I understand. Yeah, that's tough. Now, has the heater been affected by all this too? Is that part of that?
No, the heater's fine. The ice machine is the problem. It's actually, it sounds insane, but it's too cold to make ice.
I see. Well, not too bad. Okay. Well, I know we at least had one half an hour of good radio tonight. Listen, Junkie, I really appreciate your time tonight. It's been grand, and I'll try to do better next time. Any final thoughts as we depart for the evening?
Just everybody stay warm, stay safe, and we'll do it again next week.
We will do it again next week, and I'll do better next time. Thank you very much, Junkman. I appreciate it. Have a great evening, and stay warm with Dale if you could, can you?
You got it, brother.
All right, bud. That's Kevin on the Cape, and that's Random Questions Hour for hour number one. Remarkably, even though we have a new chat room and it's easier to get on, there's nobody in chat tonight. That was kind of, when you have nobody in chat, that puts you in a tough position. Like, what can you do in that situation? So, I don't know, but let's continue. much like this, the Saturday Night Live program, this podcast can be full of hits and can be full of misses. And sometimes things don't work and you have an idea and you think it's a great idea and it winds up not doing so great. So, but this will be a hit. I introduce to you now, for the first time, my friend Ryan in Camarillo, who I've known for years. He's my dad's close friend, and he's a good friend of mine as well. So let's introduce him to the show, everybody. Hello, Ryan in Camarillo. How's it going tonight?
It's going well, Davey. How's it going, man?
Great. Wow. You're sounding very nice and clear and loud. It's very good. Hopefully you're staying warm as well. It had been warm during the weekend, but everything's looking pretty good right now. So what's new with you?
Not much, brother. Just got home from work a little while ago and took the dog outside, and now I'm calling you.
Good. Good deal. I tell you what, you have been privy to quite a privilege over the last weekend with my parents, who you were very kind to take along with you and your wife. The Magic Castle, one of the most exclusive places to be in the entire Southern California region. What a thrill this was. I'm just dying to hear about the experience. My first question to you is, how did you get the invite? Who was the magician or the member who gave you the in? What was the story behind your entrance?
It was actually a friend of your dad and I. It's Roland. You've met Roland a few times.
Yeah, Roland. And, that's right.
Roland. His daughter is marrying a magician. So, and I'm not really sure I'd want my daughter to marry a magician, but he did get us in. So.
I hear you loud and clear. Yeah. You know, that's funny. I didn't realize that. That's pretty cool. And so, what a treat. Wow. So, Roland is simply the best. I mean, he's so nice. I can't even imagine. That's really cool. Has he been to the Magic Castle too? I guess he has, right? But
yeah, he's been a few times, I think.
Oh, cool, cool, very cool. So I'm sure he gives you this invitation and you jump all over it. I mean, that is simply, like I said, even if you're not a huge Magic fan, that is seriously like one of the cool inns in this whole state. So really cool, very neat. Tell us a little bit about about how it went. Like, what was the process like? Is there a magic word? Is there some password you have to use to get in? Like, what's the secret? Like, what's it like going to the Magic Castle?
Well, to start off, like we had to get down there early, and I mean, it was fine. Your mom had to pee the entire time and your dad would not stop. So when we got there, your mom actually got in like 15 minutes before everybody else because she's about to pee herself outside. But no, as you walk inside, it was awesome. You walk in, there's a hidden bookcase. You have to talk to an owl. And the owl lets you in. And really, it's just, amazing. I mean, those guys are so talented. It's baffling, really. I mean, to watch them do what they do, like, it makes no sense in your mind, but it was fun.
And it sounds like the programming there is pretty expansive, like several rooms that do magic programming, and they had the traditional parlor magic, which I understand is like you're in a room and the guy just comes into a small room and then does magic right in front of you. Like, that's cool. It's like magic at your table, like on demand. Like, I think that's really, really neat. So you have like different levels. You have like intimate magic. You have like theater magic, like in a big stage. And what was your favorite? Like, what was your favorite style of the magic that you saw that night?
Probably the sleight of hand. I know one guy, it was amazing. The gentleman we came with, and actually, just so you know, like your dad and I, both got his card. So anytime that you want to go, we can definitely hook you up so you can get in as well. So you want to take a date or your sisters or or whoever. But he was just a trick where a simple trick where he has a card in his hand and he has like four other cards and he slides my card into that card. And then he just disappears. And all of a sudden he's like, check my pocket. And he didn't even put his hand in his pocket and the card's in his pocket. It makes no sense. Like, he did it for us like five times and I'm watching it, and I'm just, I still don't understand it. Like, I just, I have no idea how that happened. Zero. But it's magic. So, what do you do?
Yeah, what do you do indeed? That's a pretty cool trick. And when somebody's that close to you and doing that, that's what really blows your mind. It's like, wait a minute. Like, you know, it's like you think, what happened? It's supposed to be some catch somewhere, some secret thing, a pocket or something, and you don't even see it. That's really funny. That's really fun.
Hey, Davey. Can I cuss? Am I allowed to?
Absolutely. This is an R-rated program. Because so you're on it.
It Go blew ahead. My fucking mind, man. It blew my fucking mind. Like, it really did. Like, I'm watching this guy. I'm like, what the fuck just happened? Like, how did that happen?
That is amazing.
Like, and then they had some other guys, like a Houdini guy.
Yeah.
And, I kind of understand how it works, but he took a flower petal and he started bouncing it in a bowl. Like, this is like 5 feet in front of us, right? And I saw him pick the flower off the flower. Like, I watched him take the petal off, he put it in the bowl, he bounced it, and then he just kept tossing it. Well, all of a sudden it turned into like a ball. And then he kept bouncing it over and over, and I'm watching this thing seriously turn into a ball. Then he picks up the ball, and it's a fucking egg, and he cracks the egg and breaks it in the bowl.
That's
no idea how that happened.
I don't get it. I don't either. That's unbelievable. It just bounces a thing around, a flower turns into a ball. Turns into an egg. You blown my mind.
It was a flower petal, man.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's cool. Ryan and Kim Rio is joining us tonight. But this is a really great experience. And many who've been to the Magic Castle, I've been privileged to hear from us with other colleagues I know who've made the trip. And it just simply is mesmerizing. So that's cool. I mean, you never want to go into something like that, hype that much, and then not live up to the hype. But it sounds like from what your experience, it sounds like it really has hit the hype for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the food is overpriced. It's mediocre. But the magic itself was well worth it. So
pretty cool. And it's
I
never,
know you're a big foodie. Yeah.
Yeah. No doubt. Was there anybody famous there in particular? Whether it be a magician or someone in attendance?
I didn't see anyone there. We talked to some gentlemen that was working there. And I guess the day before, George from Seinfeld, I can't think of his name.
Oh, Jason Alexander,
but
yeah.
He's a magician there. Yeah,
oh, Jason he was Alexander. A magician? He was a magician. I did not know.
He is a magician, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's there often, and they have pictures of celebrities all over the place. But, I mean, to be honest, like everyone, you know, suit and tie only. It's the girls all have to wear dresses. So everyone looked great. So you really can't pick out a certain celebrity. I mean, I couldn't anyways. I really wasn't paying attention, but there might have been, absolutely. I know they have a lot of pictures of everybody on the walls. So,
yeah, it sounds like you're on to something, though. Once you're there, it's enchanting regardless of who's in play because everybody there is so talented. I mean, the association of magicians is just running so strong. The depth of quality of magicianship, I imagine it's so good. So what a treat. I am thrilled. I'm glad that you got a chance to see it yourself. Now, going into this, were you a big magic guy? Were you a fan of the magic? Did you find it to be something that was a hobby of yours just to witness or follow?
No, not at all.
And you know what? That's okay.
Bullshit. Yeah.
I dig it. Because I'm not really a huge magic guy, but this enchants me. Because I was thinking, no, I'm not a magic fan, but I can appreciate the level of excellence employed in a place that is dedicated to the action of magic. I think that's really cool. So,
yeah. After I watched it for a while and I saw the guys with all their assistants and all the women that were there, like, I got to respect those guys because, like, I totally would have used that to pick up chicks, like, if I knew magic. I never thought about it before, but like, I would have. Like, that's amazing. I mean, like, putty in your hand. Like, that's, I mean, those guys are, they're awesome.
I agree.
Man crush almost. Yeah.
That's cool. That really is cool, though. I mean, I'm thrilled that you made it in there, and I'm glad it was a good time, you know? So this is Ryan and Camarillo. We introduce you to the program, first ever experience. You feeling any nervous at all? How are you feeling? You feeling all right?
No, David. It's like I'm talking to you on the phone, man.
Good deal. I like it. I like the confidence. It's very good. So, yeah, that's something I've just been wondering about for a long time. What is the Magic Castle like? Is it worth the hype? And it just sounds like it is. It totally is. How long were you there? Like it must have been about a three-hour experience?
Well, between dinner and I think we watched like four different magic shows. We were there from like 5 o'clock until probably, I don't know, 11:30 right there. It's probably 6 hours that we were there.
That is fantastic. I mean, what a program. What a night. Really cool. So Brian and Camarillo with us tonight. I'm Dave Medina, and we're just talking about magic right now. Really cool. And you already mentioned his bet, the best magic trick, the sleight of hand situation. Pretty cool. Wow, a full night. Really cool. So, seeing that we've expended 15 minutes on that, I have some other questions for you regarding everything. First of all, Ryan, it was inevitable I was going to ask this question. Cubs. They say they are going to be very good this year. Now, I think they are going to be pretty good. But are they not a year away? Because there are some projections in certain sports books that have the Cubs winning the World Series with as low as 10-1 odds. I think that went up, but they're basically very confident about this team this year, even though they hadn't been in the playoffs in the last maybe 5 years. So do you see the Cubs as a team that could make a playoff run this year? Tough question, right? Yeah.
No, Davey, I say, well, no, I dream it every year, and I always believe it every year. Like,
yep.
Every single year when it happens, like beforehand, like I am certain that this is the year. So again, yes, I'm certain this is the year. But with the, you know, Ernie Banks just died, man. It's fucking fake. And, I mean, we got Joe Maddon. I mean, we got Lester, Castro, you know, we got Rizzo over at first. Like,
yep.
We got a really young outfield that, I mean, just going to be incredible and fast and fun to watch. You know, we got a new catcher. Like, there's all sorts of talent in the AAA. Like, I mean, we got a shot, as good a shot as anybody, I think. I mean, I think the Nationals with that rotation with Scherzer and Pfister and Zimmerman and Strasburg, I mean, you got Strasburg at the four, man. Like, that's going to be tough to beat, like, for anybody. But, I mean, I think the Cubs got a shot at it. I mean, if the Royals can come close, you know, the Cubs can come close. Like, absolutely.
There's potential there, and it's getting – the teams get pretty young, and I think they've got a lot going for it right now. One thing I liked was their pitching. I thought the pitching was pretty good. They did trade Jeff Samardzija in the midseason to Oakland. I don't think that's something that's a huge loss, though, for Chicago, because I really think that they have – enough depth, and they are building more depth as we speak. Theo Epstein's doing magic over there. Speaking of magic, so I think they're on their way up. There's a chance. I'll tell you this: the Central looks open this year. It looks wide open. The Reds would have a chance at it. The Cardinals, who won the division last year, of course, they're going to be in the mix. But you never know. I mean, I just think that this is a division where I think you could see any of like four teams making it, and that includes Pittsburgh. So it's an exciting year for baseball. I mean, you have a new commissioner, Manfred, taking over. Things might be very exciting in baseball this year. So it's a dream. I think it'll be fun, and we'll see. And then you're right. I think the Cubs could have a shot. I feel like they got another year, but either way, I think this team is improving, and I've seen signs. I think they look pretty good.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I mean, I always hope, but like I said, you never know. I mean, you never know with baseball. You still got the Giants out there. You got the Dodgers. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of tough teams out there, you know, and that's not even talking to any teams from the American League. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is definitely tough to call right now. And So it'll be fun to break that down. It's also too early to really make that judgment call at the moment. There's still transactions to be made. I mean, I think really there's nothing you can really confirm at this point other than maybe, you know, Florida having a non-factor, something like that. The Padres look like they'll be better. I would guarantee you that the Padres have a better record this year than they did last year. That's not that much of a stretch because they were terrible last year. I think they finished, but they were not that terrible. They were about 70 wins. Good stuff. Yeah, good deal. So Ryan and Camarillo with us tonight.
Hey, David.
Good deal.
I have a question for you, man.
All right, what you got?
How do you think A-Rod's going to do?
You know, I don't really see much from him. I think he's shot, personally. Maybe he'll hit about 260 or something. I don't personally. He's old. He's an old guy. And I think the secret's out about his PED use. So he may tone it down, I think. I don't really see much of a ceiling. I mean, if you remember Derek Jeter's last year, he was pretty bad. He hit about 260.
Yeah.
It was a rough year. I sense with A-Rod being close to 40, it's going to be a pretty rough year for him too. Maybe everyone's going to talk about it because he's A-Rod. You know, his personality is big, is huge. But I don't think he's that good. I don't even think he'd be on a major league team if the Yankees didn't already commit all the money they did to him in those contracts. So personally, I just don't see him really doing – I don't think see him being a difference maker. I think he might get some hits, but I don't see him being like a huge, like, could you even imagine like 30 home runs from him right now? No. So I think he'll be, you know, he might have his moments. He might even get 3,000 hits this year, but.
In the new Yankee Stadium, he has a shot.
Yeah, I know.
I mean.
Yes, sir. He does.
But do you think he got the roll into the deal? Like, you look back at everybody that used PEDs, and A-Rod is the one that's hated. And you look at, I mean, everyone used them. I mean, from Pettit, and they're going to retire Pettit's number. You look at Ryan Braun. Like, Ryan Braun's an anti-Semite. He threw all his friends under the bus. I mean, he won the MVP and got caught twice. Like, and he's not hated like A-Rod is. Like, I feel bad for A-Rod, and I'm rooting for him. I hope he does well this year. I really do.
Yeah, it is kind of odd to single him out, but he's just been that kind of an oddball that I think a lot of people just have not really embraced. He's not relatable to the fan for whatever reason. I've seen a camp of people who have joined the A-Rod bandwagon just for that. Like, they feel like, I think they've unnecessarily like blamed him for a lot of stuff. And I totally get it. I mean, I think this constant desire to be liked, despite being a guy that is completely unlikable, is always amused me. So for me, an A-Rod, I don't know. I mean, I think if he does well, good for him, but it's just that he's paid so much. It's crazy. It is. But I agree with you, though. I think he's gotten a little bit too much of a bad rap. I mean, it's what really distinguishes him from a lot of guys who lied. You're right. It doesn't – I think the fact is Yankee fans just don't like his character, and he's paid too much. I think that's pretty much it.
Yeah, well, they're all paid too much.
Oh, no, they're all paid too much. They're paid a ton. And I'm not going to comment on baseball economics, but it's everybody's been paid a lot of money to play a game. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
did you ever play baseball yourself? Were you a baseball guy? I mean, did you ever play like at a high school level or maybe in a little league level?
Yeah, I played 4 years of varsity baseball in high school.
Oh, nice. I didn't know that. That's cool. What was your position?
I normally played center field. When I was younger, I played right field.
Cool.
Until the upperclassmen got out of there. So.
Center field, not bad. An athletic position, to be sure. Any highlights from your...
Things have changed.
Oh, nice. Did you ever get any game-winning hits or game-winning catches?
I mean, I'm sure I have. I don't really recall. I mean, I remember making the paper a few times and stuff like that, but it's always nice to have your name in the headlines of the local paper, but other than that, nothing major. It was more tennis for me that I was better at, you know, so.
We are learning so many things about you tonight, Ryan. Ryan and Camarillo with us tonight. Oh, yeah. Medina. Tennis was your thing. I did not realize this. Now you should go and play him.
I'm not as good as your dad is.
Oh, you're not as good. See, I was going to ask you. I was like, what if you played him? I would be interested to see that result. Okay. Now I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, for everyone listening that doesn't know, Dave's dad is virtually semi-pro and incredible tennis player.
Yeah, he hasn't played in a while, but my dad was so good when he was doing the circuit back in the day. And I remember him saying he was frustrated because, like, nobody could really be on the level of them doing, like, team tennis and tournaments and so on. And he'd do it, but his team would always be dragged down by the other guys. Like, he was usually holding up his end of the bargain. That's what I remember. So I'm a little biased, but nonetheless, I mean, I've seen it too. Like, he's very good.
Yeah.
I miss it. I miss him playing tennis a little bit, but it's all right. I mean, I think he's had his run in the sun, and I feel like he's moved on. And so he now plays golf with you, which is cool. And nice group you guys got going. Made good friendships, all that good stuff. It's good to know you, Ryan. I'm glad to have you on the podcast, too. It's really cool. This has been something I've been meaning to do for a while. I just needed a topic. We have the topic, the Magic Castle and the Cubbies. It's pretty cool. You know, and I'll tell you this. I have a friend of mine who is in Chicago right now. He's in Chicago. It's like negative 10 in Chicago. He's there. I think this is funny. I just, that's amazing. It's like freezing.
It's horrible, man. Like, it makes no sense to me why people live there. Like, I just don't get it. I don't get it. I live there, and I'm like, I'm not living here anymore. I'm out.
I mean, Chicago, it's either negative 50 or 150. It's like, it's tough. Yeah. I can imagine.
And it's windy both ways, too.
That's right. At the Windy City. That's right. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. It's very true. And I always notice, like, a lot of people who live out here in California, they come from places like Chicago and Buffalo and places where it's very cold. And I totally applaud it. I'm like, I get it. You guys made the right choice. Welcome, you know? And I guess I am a rarity. Like a guy that lives here and has grown up here, but I'm glad you're here. I think it's cool. And I'm sure you would never go back, right?
Absolutely not, man. I go back in the summer. That's about it.
There you go. Summertime. So pizza, we were talking about pizza today. Me and my buddies, we were talking about pizza because we were thinking about the ongoing debate, New York pizza versus Chicago pizza. Now, since you're from the Midwest, I'm curious as to where you stand. Like, do you have a preference?
I mean, I used to be all about Chicago. Yeah. I mean, 100% Chicago pizza. I've had some New York pizza, mostly when Pizza Hut was doing that bullshit New York style pizza, brick pizza, whatever. But I've never really experienced legitimate, like, New York pizza. But so I'm a California guy for the most part. I mean, It's just, it's perfect, so you really can't beat it.
No, I got you. Cool beans. That's a good answer, I would say. I mean, a Chicago pizza is definitely an experience, that's for sure. But I've experienced the New York. I've been very fortunate to have gone to New York City and had pizza there, Brooklyn in particular. Oh, my God, so good. If you get a chance, I would recommend it. Try it. It's very good. I can even tell you some places later on. Okay, cool. So, now, as far as your other dining adventures, you're just as adventurous with the dining as I have been on the Twitter and elsewhere. Where have you been of late that's been like a fun place, like a good restaurant? Anything that you've experienced that has caught your attention?
Oh, a lot of places, Davey. I've been to Boa in Santa Monica a few times, but went to the one in West Hollywood. Have you heard of Boa?
Yeah, I mean, I'm walking by there all the time. Like, they have a tremendous steak. They do. I've never been, but I have overwhelming responses in positive fashion.
Oh, Davey, you should indulge, man. I mean, you start off. I mean, first off, the head chef there is a 2-time James Beard Award winner.
Oh, no way! I didn't know that.
That's so cool. Yeah, so I mean, the food is bound to be fantastic. And I mean, I started out with a tableside Caesar, so they make your Caesar dressing right in front of you. the peppercorn filet. I have like a blue cheese crust on it. It's just, I mean, it's amazing. And then their baked Alaska dessert. I mean, whatever you have there is just going to blow you away. But yeah, that place is, I mean, it's incredible. It's well worth the money to go to a few times.
Nice. Now, what cut of steak do you have there, just to flesh this out?
I normally get the filet there. I had the filet last time as well.
Mm-hmm.
If I want something else, I'll normally go to Morton's Steakhouse. I like Morton's because they actually bring the steaks out to you on a tray,
right,
and allow you to select which steak that you would like. So you can actually pick out your marbling and stuff like that. So that's always nice. But normally anytime I go to a restaurant like that, I'll get filet.
Cool. Okay. Filet is a good go-to, though, because like a lot of places, they do it very well. I'm thinking Nick and Steph's does a filet really well. Really good one. Mastro's is fantastic with a filet. A lot of places do it well. Ruth's Chris. I mean, you can't go wrong with filet. It's a tremendous choice.
No, and Mastro's, I don't know if have you ever had the butter cake there?
I've never had the butter cake, no. But I've had the butter steak. And
oh, my.
Good stuff?
Oh, it'll make you, you almost cream yourself, really. It's fantastic. It's like one of the best desserts on the planet. Like, it'll blow your mind. Like, it's almost like a magic trick. You nice. Eat it, and it's just, it's wonderful. Yeah.
I love it. Ryan and Kimberly are our guests tonight. We're talking steaks at the moment, but we'll segue a little bit to hamburgers because we continue to have the ongoing debate about fast food burgers. And it's interesting. I've been getting different responses from different people. And the latest push has been for Five Guys. The traditional favorite around here is In-N-Out, as everyone knows about, very well known. But you know, most people, there's some people, a couple people I know who say the Habit is better than In-N-Out because they flame broil. And I think it's cool because they're both really good. From the fast food chains, Ryan, I'd never have asked you this question in 6 to 8 years of knowing you. Which ones are your favorites?
Oh, burger wise?
Yeah, burger wise.
I'm a Wendy's, I'm a Baconator guy, man.
Baconator.
You cannot beat a fucking Baconator at all. Like, I mean, I have a choice between, you know, In-N-Out or Wendy's. I'm going to Wendy's to get a Baconator. Like, I'm not even fucking around. That's a man's hamburger, man.
I like the Baconator. That's a good one. And it's so big. I've had the son of Baconator. That's how big it is. Like I can't even go all the way all in. I get the mini Baconator, and it is good. It is a lot of bacon.
You just kind of got to put self esteem to the side, Davey, and just who cares if it gets on your face? If it gets on your shirt, just dig in, man.
Nah, I will do it. I'll go to the real deal, the total Baconator. It looks amazing in the pictures, and I've seen it in person, and the Baconator really hits it home. I like to recommend one for you. My friends and I have been really excited about the new Jack in the Box Buttery Jack, and it's a great burger. It's a high-end style hamburger with a light coating of butter on the outside, and it makes it taste really good. So if you ever buy Jack in the Box, that would be a nice pickup for a particular meal, and it doesn't even cost that much. So Buttery Jack, you can two choices, classic or the Swiss with the bacon. Very good choices. Okay. Yeah, Buttery Jack. Jack in the Box can be creative with their burgers.
I like their commercials. What about the all-natural burger from Carl's Jr.? Have you tried that yet?
I have tried that. The all-natural burger. That is, it's a funky one. The thing about Carl's Jr. burgers is that it's just that it's very, it definitely tastes natural. I like it. I like it myself. I think the burger thing is pretty cool. It does kind of taste a little odd though, cause the seasoning isn't quite there, but I'll tell you what, because the burger, here's the thing with the all natural burger tends to come apart a little bit more. And I think that's good because it means not factory formed or any of that, and it does feel pretty real. What I like most about that all natural burger is the ingredients around it. The cheese is super aged cheddar. they use these red tomatoes. They use these great pickles. The pickles just taste so fresh. And the tomatoes really like sun-ripened, whatever you call it, tomatoes. It's a very quality burger, and it's not even that much. But the patty's a little odd. It's like you're thinking, like, well, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of like, it's like a patty that hadn't quite fully come together. It comes apart really, really easily in your mouth, though. So I think I recommend it, but it may take some getting used to, because, like, you know, if you eat Carl's regular burgers, the patty is definitely much, it's much more delicate than your typical Carl's burger. So give it a try. Let me know what you think of it.
Yeah, I will, man. I will.
I like it. Good stuff. We do have some guys in the, on the chat right now. Let's see if you guys would like to ask a question. The chat room is at chat. I keep forgetting the name. But it's called, you can go to webchat.freenode.net. webchat.freenode.net. The channel is Ditcow, DITCOW. If you have a question for us for the rest of the hour, just let us know. This is my friend Ryan in Camarillo, known for several years. Good times, now happily married. Good times there too. So yeah, the natural burger, I'm into it. Did you have it? I forgot. Did you have it or no?
I have not tried it yet.
Oh, okay. Give it a go. Give it a go. I think you'll like it. I think you'll like it. I don't know where you are with the, with the, with like fixings and stuff, but it, the fixings are unbelievably good on those. So I think you'll have a positive experience. You know, it's always a fun gimmick. You know, they do like, I think Carl's has been trying to make themselves out to be like a more organic place, a freshly baked buns, freshly made biscuits. They have fresh, what was the other thing? Oh, they had the, oh, remember the hand breaded chicken they did a while ago? Hand-bread chicken tenders.
Yeah.
What was your take on that? Did you feel like that was that added like a little extra to those things?
No, it's just chicken tenders, man. I mean, it didn't taste that much different than other places' chicken tenders. But I mean, we have Chick-fil-A. I'm not sure if Chick-fil-A is everywhere, but comparable. Like, I'd still go to Chick-fil-A for chicken tenders every time.
Well, Chick-fil-A is really good. I've never had the tenders, but the regular sandwiches, I'm a big fan of. I love the Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A is oh, just, and it melts in your mouth. I'm telling you, like, you put that in your mouth, and if you ever had the breakfast version with a biscuit, oh, it's really good.
Yeah, but nothing pisses you off about Chick-fil-A more than like showing up on Sunday and they're closed.
Yeah, hey, you gotta deal with it. I mean, the guy is a religious guy. What can you do? What can you do?
So, I'm not bashing you for being a religious guy. I'm just saying, if you forget that it's Sunday and you get the expectation of Chick-fil-A.
Oh, I know.
And then you get there and Chick-fil-A is closed. So
it's happened to me a couple of times, but I've figured it out since then. It's just something you work with. You work around it. Like, certain places are closed on weird times. Like, you just figure it out. You work it out. So I'm very happy to have a Chick-fil-A in the area now. And similar in the case of Oxnard, that they have a Chick-fil-A too. Pretty good. I mean, it's, I think the best foods, the best fast foods, the best any foods, foods that are easy to eat, that don't take that much effort to eat, really indicates the quality of the food. I was at Soup Plantation yesterday, Ryan. I had a lot of great foods. I had a Cajun chicken salad to start. And it really took no effort to eat it. It was so good. It was amazing. It just went right down perfectly. Tomato soup, same thing. Sausage, same thing. It was just a phenomenal day. So, you know what I mean? Like, I think if you really have to bite it hard, you have to search for the taste in your tongue, it doesn't quite fit in. So, what are your among your favorite foods like that? Like, where have you had a moment where you found it so easy to consume a particular food or beverage?
Now, do you want like fast food or do you want like regular food?
Well, like, start with fast food because that's what we were talking about. But we'll segue to regular food too.
Yeah. well, I'm hooked on the Taco Bell. Okay. Doritos tacos.
All right.
Yeah, you can't beat that. And then, yeah, I mean, I'm always good with some McDonald's, like an apple pie or a McFlurry or stuff like that. But, for the most part, I don't eat a whole lot of fast food. I mean, most of the time, like if I'm out at work or whatever, I'll actually go to a sit down restaurant, even like an Olive Garden and just have dinner or, a nice lunch instead of getting all the processed stuff.
I love it. And, so you're a fan of pasta. That's a good deal. So here's another question. So Olive Garden, you know, they have a lot going for it. You know, it's a good menu, nice specials. In Ventura County, where have you found the best quality pastas? Like an Italian restaurant or what have you? Because I really not really found anything that really consistently hit home with me. I found some good ones, comfort food. Back in the day, we had like Little Tony's, we had Armando's. But where have you found, like, in that area, where have you found a restaurant that really just hit it perfectly with, like, pasta and Italian food?
Besides Presto Pasta?
Presto Pasta's not bad. I'm not going to knock that, but yeah.
I'm just joking. I'm trying to think of the restaurant. I just went there with their parents the other week. Nueve Noche or something like that. It's in Heritage Square in Oxnard. That was fantastic. The Napa Tavern in Westlake is authentic Italian. Very good food. It's legitimate. There's a little restaurant in Camarillo called Sapphire. It's off of Pleasant Valley. That's legitimate Italian food, but probably the best, I'm sure you've seen is on TV, Fabio, from Top Chef. He's also on Yahoo and such now.
Yeah.
He has a restaurant in Moorpark called Cafe Ferenz. Cafe Ferenz is legitimately probably the best Italian restaurant in the area. He makes his own pasta, like it's all handmade. It's gourmet. It's the minestrone soup, the ravioli. That's the only place I had wild boar ravioli. Like, I've never had that before, but it was delicious.
So one more time, the name of it was something, Fatavio, what was it? Flavio?
Cafe Ferenz.
Oh, Ferenz, yeah, Ferenz. Cafe Ferenz, okay, cool. I think you mentioned it before off air to me and the guy from Top Chef, and that's a major, major mark in a positive direction. So Cafe Ferenz, I got to remember that in my brain, give it a go. I'm always looking for a good dish of pasta. So that's pretty cool. If you're ever out here, I can recommend a number of places. Number one, for the fun time and for a good value for your money, C&O's by Venice. I think that's where it is. It's around Venice, basically, I don't know, from Washington. It's really close to the Venice beach, and it's fun. It's really fun. Good pasta, and you get good portions, too. Really good. Then you want to go a little upscale. Il Forneo, I think, is one that people talk about. I think it's all right. I don't think it's necessarily worth the money. But the one I think that's very close to me, I haven't tried it yet, but I hear it's really good, Toscana in Brentwood. But you just got to be prepared for those prices, like $20 a plate. It's like $20 for spaghetti. Would you pay $20 for spaghetti, Ryan? That's just nuts. Spaghetti.
I would absolutely pay $20 for spaghetti, Davey.
Would you really? If it's
good. It had to be worth it. But, if it was worth it, I would pay it.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Good deal. All right. Any other adventures that you wish to share with us tonight, Ryan?
Well, not really, Dave. I was hoping to get your idea. Like, I was listening to the radio today. They were talking about maybe bringing Drogic into the Lakers.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get your idea on that.
I think he's really good, though. But I think he's pretty good. But it's an endless trade. I'm like, what is this going to do? Unless he's signed for us long term. Like, what is this going to really do? Like, he's fun. He's a gritty guy. Like, he's a very fiery player. I mean, he's a good player. He's just good. He's playing good. I like Drogic. I don't know how they're going to get him, though. What would they trade? I don't know what would they trade to even get him. Like, what? That's my problem. Like, I'm concerned about them giving up more draft picks. We could give up a draft pick to Phoenix as it is if we don't finish in the bottom five. So giving up another draft pick would just be just completely terrible. So I don't know. I guess to answer your question, I love Dragic. I think it'd be cool if he made it to the team. But at what price? That's the one I'm curious about. What are they offering? And I got to go read about this because I haven't really been paying attention. But I know he wants out of Phoenix. That's been clear. His agent's like, yeah, he's out. He's gone. Same with Reggie Jackson. He's like, yeah, he's out of here. Forget it. And so I was thinking, well, that's too bad for that team, but it's probably going to happen. So you're right. He's gone. Let me ask you, what do you think the Lakers would offer for Dragic in that situation?
I don't know. I mean, you would think Steve Nash has an expiring contract, but Dragic is expiring as well.
That's the thing, yeah.
I'm not really sure. I mean, we don't have a lot. I mean, maybe a Jordan Hill. He's probably going in free agency. I don't know. I mean, we don't have any pieces. Like, they're not going to take Swaggy P for him. I mean, I would do that trade in a heartbeat just because Swaggy P annoys me and, like, you know, but whatever. But, I would trade anything I could to get him. I mean, I think he's legitimately, I mean, buried in Phoenix. Phoenix has so many point guards, and he still stands out. I mean, they're point guard loaded, and I think he would do good here. I mean, especially if Kobe comes back to you next year, we get another good piece. You know, he would be a good fourth option, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, he almost reminds me of Tony Parker taking the ball to the hole. I mean, he could be that good.
He could be that good. I remember that he was actually mixing it up with the Lakers in the playoffs some years ago. So he's been around a while, but I think it'd be great. But like you said, an expiring contract, you have to guarantee that he would make it here past this season for it to be worth it at all. Otherwise, it makes no sense. This team isn't going anywhere anyway. So this would be a trade that you would have to make that would extend beyond the current season. So that's the thing. But overall, I think he would be a big upgrade to the team and much needed help in the backcourt. So I like Dragic in a vacuum. I just hope that the price is reasonable from the Lakers side to acquire him. If they involve trade picks at all, I'm not going to be happy because I think that's the way to the future. They got to accumulate the picks. They got to get right. I mean, I think they need to stay the course and get that fifth overall pick or better. And they're well on their way to that as long as they don't do anything too gross, in a positive direction. I mean, it's not the end of the world if they end up finishing terribly because it means five or below, decent chance of getting a good draft pick. So I just have a very weird approach to the team this year. It's a very different type of year for the Lakers.
Yeah. Do you think Phoenix, though, is going to throw it in? Because, I was looking at the standings today, and Phoenix still sits at 8. But I know Oklahoma is right behind them. So I'm not sure if, you know, I'm hoping they're kind of mail it in because to see Oklahoma move up to 8 and to be able to get an Oklahoma Golden State first round, that would be incredible. And I don't know if Phoenix is mailing it or not, but I'm hoping they are.
Yeah, I think realistically, I don't think Phoenix can really be taken seriously, even if they make the playoffs. Their defense is just terrible. I don't really see – every time I see the game, it's 150, 140, or 120 to 110. And it's just this team is doing nothing in the playoffs. It's fun to watch, but I can't imagine them winning games consistently over a series.
Yeah, I don't either. When you look at the West, San Antonio is sitting in the seventh spot. San Antonio. I mean, Phoenix is not going anywhere, but Oklahoma City could. So,
yeah, Oklahoma City could.
It should.
Reggie Jackson, do you think he gets traded? What do you think? Because I feel like he's kind of been phased out already because Russell Westbrook's been playing so well, and then somebody else I think has been stepping up too.
Yeah, it's possible. Absolutely. They could probably use a little bit more help down low than they could. I don't know. I mean, it's
It's up in the air. It's going to be fun, dude. Like this, like I know a lot of people don't care that much about the NBA regular season, but like, I think this second half is going to be fun. I mean, especially in the West. I mean, the East, like I know Atlanta is as good as they are, but I mean, I just don't see them being, I mean, I still think it's between Cleveland and Chicago. I mean, I know they're like the fourth and fifth seed, but you know, I don't see anybody else really doing any damage to them.
You know, people.
Well, it's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun. It is going to be fun. And I understand a lot of everybody's viewpoint on this. And a lot of people have been not buying into Atlanta because, like, who's that guy? Who's going to be that go-to guy? And I will offer Jeff Teague for that. I think he's a great player, and he's had big performances, even had some pretty big performances against Indiana last year in the playoffs. And I mean, I understand people not buying into him because, like, they don't have a lot of household name value. But we'll see what the second half brings. I mean, the question is, now that people know about them, and people do now at this point, they have the number one seed, are they going to, you know, are they going to buckle under their own hype, or are they going to pick it up and keep going? And I don't know. I really don't know. That's the excitement of the season, like just like you said. But I like this team. The Atlanta Hawks, they don't have any specific guy, like any superstar. They haven't any superstar. They have none. I get it. But this team plays together, they pass well, and they defend well. So I think they could make up for that with the element of team play, which I used to see about 10 years ago with the Detroit Pistons. So it reminds me of that team, of those Pistons teams with Chauncey Billups and Rip Hamilton and Ben Wallace. And just that team, no, they didn't have a superstar, but they played together. And I'm very excited to see what they do. Maybe they won't do anything, but I think I would be very excited to at least find out. You're right, though. I think Cleveland probably ends up being the victor out of all that, or maybe Chicago. So we'll see. Chicago's an inconsistent team, though, so that's not the other thing about them. So you're not in the – I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, no, I just didn't say that. Detroit team way better than this Atlanta team with Rasheed Wallace and Ben Wallace.
Yeah.
Wallace was defensive player of the year. Yeah. Tayshaun Prince. Yeah. I mean, they were sick, man. But they only won one championship. But
right,
you know,
the finals though.
But Atlanta reminds me a lot of San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really do. I mean, I'm not sure. Like, you know, before Tony Parker was Tony Parker and Ginobili was Ginobili. Like, you know, they had David Robinson and stuff like that, but we didn't really know who they were.
Right.
They kind of remind me of that, but. Yeah, I still don't. I mean, I think if Derrick Rose steps up and Powell plays well for him, I mean, you know, and the Butler kid, like, I don't see him beating Chicago. I just don't. Even if they pass the ball.
Well, I mean, I do agree that Chicago certainly got the experience and they've got great defense. And so that's the other thing. Thibodeau has that team up and down right now, but in the playoffs, if they go against each other, the issue with Atlanta is size. I don't think they really have anybody in the paint. And so I'm trying to think about, well, who is it, like Horford? Who is it going to be the guy that can consistently be reliable either defensively or offensively to get to take control of the paint? And I'm thinking, well, nothing's really standing out to me right now. So you flip the coin, you go to Chicago, you're thinking about, all right, you have Joakim Noah, who's really just one of the more reliable players of late. He can get under people's skin, but he's a very good defender, in my opinion. So I think that's a good play. It's a good team. It's a very good team. And it's going to be fun. And, you know, and I'll tell you this, and I'm sure you would agree, experience wins. When it comes to the playoffs, experience wins. You very rarely see teams without experience making a huge run in the playoffs. And Atlanta would not have any experience, really. These guys, like, you know, Damari Carroll and Teague had it last year when he was playing with them. But a lot of these guys have not really had, like, serious playoff experience. And so they need time. I feel like maybe this isn't their year, ultimately, to make it to a championship. Let's flip the coin to the West now. Golden State is, however. You've seen Curry, you've seen Thompson, you've seen a bunch of these guys go to the playoffs and have their run. Is it going to be different for Golden State this year, such as they are?
I mean, it's going to be tough for them to win because, I mean, they do play D. I mean, they actually do. They, well, legitimately, they can play some defense. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the West is just so loaded.
Yeah.
I mean, just loaded. I mean, from Oklahoma to San Antonio, Memphis is incredible. Portland is incredible. The Clippers, like, the Rockets, like, I mean, pick your poison. Like, who do you, like, the West, picking somebody out of the West, like the Golden State, like, could, but, I mean, if you get a couple of lockdown defenders on Thompson and Curry, I mean, you know, because, you know, people, defense, like, changes in the playoffs, and everybody's just going to isolate right towards them. And, like, we saw, like, teams like back in the day, like when the Suns were really good with Nash and everything, like, you know, it's different in the playoffs. I mean, teams change their defense up and, you know, your guards, you know, it's a ruthless game. So I'm not sure if they're ready for that, but like I said, we'll see. I'm excited for it. I really am, dude. I'm pumped about the NBA season.
It's going to be a really fun playoffs. I have similar concerns about Golden State. I love that team and I think they're fun to watch and I think they have good guys. They have a bunch of good guys there, but their issue is defense. I don't know. And they rely a little bit too much on the three-point shot. They shoot so many three-pointers per game. They don't shoot as many as Portland, funnily enough. I think they said – I got a stat from our friend Andy in Seattle that the couple guys in Portland, I believe dang, I forgot their names, but they shoot more three-pointers than do Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, but they still shoot a lot. Again, the team in total – shoots a ton of threes. And the problem is in the playoffs, that doesn't fly because eventually teams are going to really be good on the perimeter. Good example of this coming up, San Antonio at Golden State. Last time they played, San Antonio really had their way, and it's because their perimeter defense happens to be very good in that situation. So I imagine that similar outcome will occur. When the Warriors have lost games, they've lost games to good defensive teams. And it's happened pretty consistently. They lost at Atlanta. They lost at home to Chicago in overtime. And they lost to San Antonio, as we mentioned. Although I don't know if San Antonio is really a good defensive team right now. But I just – that makes you worry. Like, you're never sure about Golden State just because of that. It's like it seems like some of the same issues they faced in years past are the same issues they have now. I mean, I think that they don't really have an answer for the paint. They don't have any depth in the front court. It's going to be – it's going to be a challenge for them.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
Good stuff.
I need something to watch why our Kings are not in the playoffs, really. So.
I don't know. Let's see if they've won, four or five in a row? They beat Tampa Bay. They're playing Colorado tonight. If they win that one.
Yeah.
I know they're down, but if they win this game, we'll see. Definitely has been an up and down year for – mostly down for the Kings, but they always say if they make it, could be interesting.
Well, we've already won it once as an 8 seed, but I know there's still – I think they're down 2 points to the Sharks right now for the 8 spot. So
yeah, still a long hill to climb. But, you know, it's always funny. Like the way they get in the playoffs, both of those years they won the Cup, they had to climb and climb and climb just to get in, and they would always get in at the very end. And they'll always be like in the lower end of the standings. It's just, I think it's so funny how they managed to save their best for last. I'm curious as to whether that'll continue, but it'll be fun to find out anyway. Quick question. Okay, Clippers, since we are a West Coast show, we shall bring them up. I'm not into it. I am not into this team. Their bench is playing poor defensively, and they cannot put games away. Is this team just simply not as good as people expect?
They could be. I mean, now that, you know, Blake is down, it's not going to be as easy. I mean, absolutely not. But I think you're right. Like they don't seem to have the chemistry that they've had in years past with DeAndre
90
and Chris
seconds.
Paul. And I mean, it's just not the same. I mean, Barnes is still out there. Barnes plays hard. Reddick plays hard every day. And, like, I appreciate that when I watch him, but, like, it just doesn't seem like they have the chemistry. And, really, I don't think Chris Paul's been as dominant. He just doesn't seem to take over games like a superstar should. And not like he used to, anyway.
Bless you.
And then, I mean, the trade for Doc Sun. I think that, I mean, since that trade went on, it's just kind of seemed kind of off. Like, I don't know if it messed up the chemistry in the locker room or what, but it just, you know, they gave up a couple guys for that, like two or three guys for that. And I've read a couple places that those guys were, you know, pretty good locker room guys and everybody liked them. So I don't know. I'm not even thinking about the Clippers having a chance at winning this year, though.
Yeah, I can't take them that seriously right now. They've got a lot of issues, and certainly defensively is a part of that. Well, that wraps it up for tonight. Ryan, thank you so much for joining me for the entire hour. It's really been a good time. Thank you again. Let's do it again sometime.
Sounds good, Davey. Hope you have a good night, man.
Thank you so much. You too. Good to hear from you. That's Ryan and Camarillo in the first of, I
think,
several appearances here on the program. It's been fun. It's been fun. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We'll see you next time. Boy, this has been a crazy show, I must say. We'll go ahead and sign off with this for you guys. Without the recording computer, things have just been a little different. We can't use our regular closing music, so I leave you with this. Good night, everybody. We will see you again Wednesday at this time here in the city.